call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We have three bills on our agenda today. We'll just probably take them in order. So we will start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2478. Christine.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2478, it comes from the House Revenue Committee. And it was also, these changes were recommended by the Government Efficiency Task Force, which was convened by the 2009 legislature. And what this measure would do would be to bypass the Board of Property Tax Appeals process for principal or secondary industrial properties. And any appeals that come up related to these properties would be required to therefore go directly to tax court instead of the Board of Property Tax Appeals. It's estimated this would save about 3 months of time in the process of the appeal. And as a result, there is a savings related to interest if there's any successful appeals of 12%. So this is estimated to be $150,000 per biennium in 11-13 and 2013-15. And there is a minimal fiscal impact statement on this measure as well.
Okay, and we have Representative Nathanson here to talk on this. And anyone you want to bring? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. This bill is one of several that the Senate will be hearing, as you heard, from the Government Efficiency Task Force. As you may know, that group looked at a number of program areas or services where the state and local governments, particularly counties, overlap in the delivery of a service area. Recognizing the need to restructure government and do things better, the task force was comprised of two senators, two representatives, and then local elected officials and others representing local government organizations and agencies. They met together to talk about how to fix problems, find efficiencies, eliminate burdensome procedures, and so forth. Places where we're stepping on each other's toes, doing things two or three times, or things have changed since the law was developed in the 1930s or 40s. Just really turning over lots of stones and finding out what we need to clean out. Maybe a better picture would be opening up a closet and cleaning out a closet. The task force approved nearly two dozen ideas for including in their final report. Several of those ideas will be accomplished through administrative actions, and we were really glad to uncover those. However, some of them did require statutory change. Thus, you're getting one of those right now with this bill. We do need to work better and work smarter, and what we've found is that it's imperative that the state and local governments work together, because that's how you get some of the real efficiencies accomplished, by doing it together. I'm very pleased, as chair of that task force, to tell you that this is one of those ideas that the task force adopted unanimously to forward to this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Miller. I'm the Policy and Planning Division Administrator at Business Oregon. I was the agency's appointed person on the Governor's Efficiency Task Force, and I served on the Assessment and Taxation Subcommittee that Representative Nathanson mentioned. My job today is to tell you that I was probably the least informed about the property tax system when I got appointed to the subcommittee. Mm-hmm. I was really the person who challenged all of the resident experts in the room to ask the basic questions. Were the ideas that we were talking about really make sense simply and pass a real efficiency sniff test? I'm pleased to tell you today that House Bill 2478, I believe, does that. And it does it because it streamlines an appeal process by putting the decision-making authority in the place that has the most expertise. You'll hear members of the department and a local Board of Property Tax Assessment chairperson talk about the specifics of the process. But this is one of those cases where, in my opinion, no taxpayers' rights are infringed on. They have the same appeal right that they had before, but it happens in a more efficient manner. And that should be something that we're all working towards. As a passionate public service servant, I'm excited to have had the opportunity to work on the Governor's Efficiency Task Force because I think there are lots of opportunities to improve government service delivery. As an Oregonian taxpayer, I hope that you'll take action on this bill today and that it's the beginning of a long conversation about the things that we can do differently, particularly when we work together. I'm happy to answer any specific questions that you have about the subcommittee.
Thank you, and I want to thank you both for your work on this. This is we're looking forward to all the bills that you produced out of that. Sounds okay. Like it was a very useful and productive process. Questions from the committee? Okay, no questions. We will call John Phillips and Sue Thompson. Now, quit pointing at each other. Somebody has to talk.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue, and I'm just here to talk about any of the substantive issues or policy questions that you have on this bill. It's primarily focused at eliminating a step in the process that doesn't seem to serve any purpose. That is a step that these kinds of entities that can appeal, which are only companies that are $1 million or more in industrial nature, that they can already elect to skip the Board of Property Tax Appeals, and over half of them currently do. They just appeal straight to the magistrate. The rest of them will file an appeal, and often the board will just sustain the value that's been asserted because there isn't really sufficient time to even get into the detail of, and that's why the chair of the Marion County Board is here to talk about actually what happens in front of the board so you can get a sense of what's going on in one of these appeals. So we think it's just a common sense thing to do, and it makes sense, and they selected the type of businesses that it really doesn't serve a purpose for. So,
thank you. Ms. Thompson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Burdick. I'm Susan Thompson, and I have served as chair or as a member of the Board of Property Tax Appeals, or the Board of Equalization, and also the Board of Ratio Review, which was the precursor to the Board of Property Tax Appeals, since early 90s. That's a long time to be sitting on this board. And so I've found that, in general, though the board members are all experts in their fields of real estate or banking, industry, building trades. These people sit on a board that has a hearing for 15 minutes. We do the very best we can to look at all the detail and the data that's given us, but we do have a 15-minute time frame. A property that comes into us that $1 million and over, the 15 minutes and the complexity of that kind of a property is just beyond the 15 minutes and sometimes the expertise of the board. It makes better sense to have the Board of Property Tax Appeals, or BOPTA, not hear these and have them start their process at the magistrate or the department level. And so I'm here just to tell you that as far as efficiency for the county and the work that the county clerks and the county assessor's office go through to put these petitions together and to make sure that they're heard, even in their 15-minute time frame, it's really not cost-effective. They should start elsewhere and give the board the opportunity to hear other claims and other petitions that they have more ability to hear in a more efficacious manner, I guess you'd say. So the BOPTA, I'm speaking for the BOPTA boards from around the state, and I really do think that I and this group here that's testifying would get a standing ovation from all of these BOPTA members, because this is really quite something that we all deal with every time we have a set of hearings.
Let's see, 1990, that's
It's a long time.
21 years.
Well, maybe it's a little. I figured it's about 17 years, because I served in the position of assessor at Marion County for a year, and then I had to take a year off because supposedly I had a conflict of interest.
Okay. All right, questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you. In the revenue write-up, the statement is the Board of Property Tax Appeals rarely, if ever, sustains a reduction in value and will often move the case along to tax court. I can understand in the case of a complex industrial property. My question would be, is that a statement that applies generally to all appeals that are made?
Not all, no. But in general, yes, it does. And just, we would move it along by sustaining it. We sustain the value, and then they can take an appeal on to the magistrate from that point.
And my question, what popped into my mind, Madam Chair, was if the board rarely, if ever, sustains a reduction.
Sometimes. It depends. It depends on what's brought to the board. But in general, that board hears of these complex cases, they try their very best to give them all of the time and consideration possible, but sometimes that 15 minutes or 20 minutes, because sometimes we extend these things out, doesn't give a complex property the amount of time it needs to be effectively heard by a board of this kind.
Well, when you talked about very seldom reducing the taxes, you're talking about these large, complex properties. You weren't talking about all of your appeals.
I mean, no, just a very large one. I'm only dealing with a very few.
Right. And when someone small comes in, your experience, I presume, is a little different.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think
that was behind my question.
Yeah.
Because, quite honestly, I thought, well, if you never sustain a reduction,
I don't know why that is written that way.
It is.
That doesn't make sense.
I thought I heard her too, but you're right, Senator Morse. No. It wasn't clear from the comments. Other questions?
If I might add, I think sustained and reduced probably in the same sentence wouldn't make as much sense, because sustain typically means that you just sustain whatever the value the assessor put on the property and then move it on. Whereas the individual or person or company might come in and ask for a reduction. So you wouldn't sustain a reduction. You would either allow a reduction, which the board does for a lot of commercial and residential type accounts, but doesn't often for industrial accounts. They'll sustain.
Right.
So there's a little confusion on that.
And when we do sustain, then that opens the door for the taxpayer to go on to the magistrate's court and make an appeal. The assessor also can appeal the action of the board. So both sides can still appeal. But what our position is why put it on BOPTA at this point when it really is a magnification of the work that's required by the county clerk and the county assessor's office for something that's going to go on anyway. In most cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So efficiency stands.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's a good catch by the task force. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have signed up. Does anybody else want to talk on this? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2478 and open a work session on House Bill 2478. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2478 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2478 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Telfer, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2569. Christine.
House Bill 2569 would allow a assessor to issue a deferred billing credit on a property tax appeal that has over $1 million at issue. This measure comes from the House Revenue Committee, and there has been found no expenditure impact, and there's an indeterminate revenue impact. The idea behind this bill would be to refund the money that's at issue in the appeal to the taxpayer during the time that the appeal is being processed and heard, and this would ultimately save the 12% interest that would be paid to a taxpayer upon successful appeal if the appeal were found in the taxpayer's favor. By letting them hold the money in the meantime, it allows the local governments to save the interest charges that would require. There was a lot of work done in the House Revenue Committee on the technical aspects of this bill. There were some clarifications that individual assessors would have the option to issue the credit for the portion of disputed value in their own county if there's an appeal going on a property that's in multiple counties. There's a clarification in the bill that the amount at issue is the real market value of the property or specially assessed value rather than the amount of tax at issue. So if there's over $1 million being disputed in value, the tax associated with that would be able to be refunded. The measure also deals with a couple of other just technical issues. It allows a 45-day period from the date of a mailing, a notice for the taxpayer to pay any outstanding tax on an unsuccessful appeal. It allows them 45 days to pay that tax that they owe. There's a requirement in the measure that requires the county assessor to issue a quarterly report to the governing body of a county if there are any outstanding deferred billing credits in their county at that time. And also, it applies the standard 3% discount to any additional taxes that are payable upon resolution of an appeal. So the taxpayer doesn't lose the opportunity to get the 3% discount upon a successful appeal that they would have had if they had paid their tax normally and not appealed.
Okay. Bill Riddell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. We respectfully urge you to pass this bill. It, as your staff indicated, authorizes the county assessor to order a deferred billing credit to a taxpayer appellant if the value at issue on appeal exceeds $1 million. The bill originates from the County Assessors Association and a large value appeal work group convened by AOC in the interim, which included direct stakeholders on property tax collections. After technical amendments, it passed the House 57-3. Under current law, with a large value appeal, a taxpayer appellant typically pays the taxes for the disputed amount of value on which accrues 12% interest. After the appeal is settled, which could take years, and there is money owed to the taxpayer, the payment to the taxpayer plus interest comes out of the current unsegregated tax account. In other words, it's paid by other taxpayers from their payments for schools and other public services. Substantial refund and interest payments can, at worst, blow holes in local budgets and, at best, cause uncertainty in the local budgeting process. The work group found the best solution available. The taxpayer keeps her money to use as she wishes without the threat of the 16% delinquent interest accumulating against her. In return, no refund interest accumulates on that amount. This is not perfect. The taxes are not collected and not distributed to schools and other districts, but it does reduce the exposure of the unsegregated tax account and is eminently fair to the taxpayer. Just a single example of what's at stake. In the districts in Multnomah County, one county, in one case, Comcast appeal, and those two, in that situation alone, the interest during the first year has accrued at $40,000 a month. Now in the second year, the accrued amount doubles as the amount of disputed value accumulates, and this trend will continue. The expectation is the Comcast appeal will run 5 years or more. So we urge you to pass this bill. It's straightforward, friendly to the taxpayer, and keeps more revenues working for public services. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Jed Tompkins and Randy Walruff. And somebody else?
I think you have Bob Grohman.
And Bob Grohman?
Kind of
written below.
Everybody gets to come because there's three chairs.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Grohman. I'm the Clackamas County Assessor and Tax Collector, also President of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. And really, I have with me the Multnomah County Assessor and County Council from Multnomah County. And we're really here to answer any questions, if there are, about this particular bill. What I would add in to sort of preface any questions is that we think that this is a well thought out proposal to try to address concern from the tax districts about the potentially huge refund and interest payments that can occur with a large value appeal. And I think Mr. Riddell from AOC explained very well how the what the mechanism of the deferred billing credit is. Very simply is there's a large appeal. The assessor has the discretion to issue a deferred billing credit for some of that value that may be at issue, some or all of it. And it is certainly fair to the taxpayer to the extent that the taxpayer will keep his money, even if ultimately the appeal is successful in favor of the county and taxing districts. But in the interim, the taxpayer keeps its money until that resolution, and if and he will not be penalized and will not accrue any additional interest in the form of delinquent interest on that value at issue, and he will get an opportunity to pay the taxes that would be the subject of the deferred billing credit with a discount if it were found in favor of the assessor. So we've tried to take into consideration the taxpayer's position and certainly their need to be able to contest a value, but also try to mitigate the impact of a large value appeal and its impact to taxing districts, especially with the interest rate. You heard one example in Clackamas County. That same appeal for Comcast currently is costing about $18,000 a month for the 2009 year, and it will have doubled to almost $36,000 a month now that we have 2 years at issue, and we still have potentially, several years of further appeal. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to address them either to me specifically or to Multnomah County or their council.
Okay, so basically you'd have discretion over how much of a credit to give, and you'd obviously only give the amount, or the maximum amount you give would be the amount in dispute. In other words, not the whole tax.
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
Bill, and so do you anticipate any collection problem? I mean, if you win the appeal, do you anticipate any collection problems of recovering that money?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, of course, this would be a new process, but we don't expect any collection process that wouldn't be able to be addressed under current law with the lien on real property. So right now we don't expect that we will experience that, and again, it still gives that property owner the opportunity to pay those taxes that were deferred in full within a 46-day period, where they can still pay with discount, and they will not have accrued any additional interest.
Do you have a question, Senator Telford?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you envision a change in the rate, the number of appeals that you might get since people don't have to pay up front? Would you anticipate an increase in those appeals?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I don't think we're expecting an increase because it's discretionary and the assessor doesn't necessarily have to issue a deferred billing credit. That's a decision that would be made on a property-by-property basis based on what we thought the merits of the potential litigation or appeal process would present us.
Okay.
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, Randy Waller from Oklahoma County Assessor. This subject was discussed at length as we worked through devising this strategy, Mr. Vroman hit just on it. It is discretionary for the assessor. There was a lot of concern that people would appeal their taxes, and we look at this as another tool in the toolbox for the assessor to deal with litigation management. In our responsibility to not only the county, but to all the taxing districts, how to appropriately address appeals and the financial impact it has on all the taxing districts. And the beauty of this proposal is that it takes that burden off all the taxing districts to pay this interest refund from the unsegregated tax account, when in fact the account taxes to begin with only went to certain taxing districts. It's the best solution we could come up with, and by leaving it in the assessor's discretion, again, there a taxpayer could appeal their value. There would be no motivation on the assessor's part to make this refund and proceed with a refundable tax credit unless the litigation risk was extremely high.
So, follow up. Since it's at the discretion of the tax assessor, which is an elected person, will there be at some point some sort of rulemaking that tones down the discretion? I mean, I can see that being a pretty political decision.
Yeah, go ahead.
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer. This is Jed Tompkins, Multnomah County Council. Not all assessors in the state are elected. Some are appointed. Okay. There was some discussion as to whether the discretion should be in the assessor or in some other body, the county board, for instance, or something like that. That doesn't make a whole lot more sense because they're not the only taxing jurisdiction that's impacted by a large appeal. There's the school district and what have you. What we did add, and Ms. Broniak mentioned some of the technical aspects that were added to the bill, is this quarterly report to the board. So there's sort of a public process to this. Now, there it does make some sense to leave it with the assessor because the assessor actually does this with all litigation. There's discretion how to proceed on the assessor's part because the assessor's the named defendant in those cases.
And I presume that it's standard practice in the counties to consult with legal counsel, because I think the risk is if you're appealing and they give you one of these credits, you're going to think you have a pretty strong case. And so, I mean, do you see it muddying up the legal strategy at all?
Well, I support the bill, and I would like to be able to work with my clients and with this bill. So I don't see it as muddying, but helping everyone out, really.
It's an interesting thing. You might be back. You might be back on this one.
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay. Senator Morris?
I do have a question. As I understand the bill, anything above $1 million, you would automatically go down the road of a deferred. What's behind my question is, why put $1 million in the bill if you have the discretion and it resides solely within your county to make a decision?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris. This is really to address large value appeals that could have a significant impact to the taxing districts as a result of a long appeal that would accrue a significant amount of interest. The reason that there's a value threshold is that large value means maybe something different in Multnomah County or Clackamas County that it might mean in Jefferson County or some of our eastern and southern counties. So we wanted a threshold that would will make this option available to all jurisdictions rather than just some of the jurisdictions that have really dramatically large valued properties. So it would be a tool for everyone. And again, that threshold doesn't mean that the assessor is automatically going to issue a deferred billing credit. He's going to look at that appeal and again, in deciding how they want to proceed with the defense of that appeal, make that determination and also consider how complicated or complex that appeal may be and how long it may take, which would result in significant interest potentially if the county didn't prevail. And I think I would add, and maybe it would be helpful for all of the members, that the assessor already has some unilateral discretion to just reduce a value that's been appealed to a level that they think is appropriate, and the petitioner then can continue on with the appeal process if they don't believe that reduction is significant or that they agree with it. But that discretion already exists in the law, where when a property is appealed and the assessor thinks that the value maybe should be reduced, that they can unilaterally make that decision to reduce it. So there's discretion in the appeal process right now, and that discretion goes all the way to, as the Multnomah County Assessor explained, we settle appeals all the time without going to the actual trial process. So that discretion exists pretty significantly in the appeal process already with the assessor.
Well, but that's for settling a case. This is different. This is
money.
This is where you actually are disputing something.
That's correct. But Madam Chair, I was trying to address the discretionary part.
Okay.
And I'm still, I apologize for being fixed gold on this. If it's greater than $1 million, you may. If it's less than $1 million, you may, provided it resides in your county.
No.
That's the way I read the bill.
No, Madam Chair, Senator Morris, it would have to exceed that $1 million threshold before we could take advantage of this deferred billing credit.
So it's only for the large ones?
Yes, it's only a large value appeal.
What would happen?
Option.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Line 10 explained to me, may order inclusion of a deferred billing credit, sub A, 12, line 12, even if the dollar amount in dispute is $1 million or less. I read that as may on both sides of the $1 million.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, that's referring to centrally assessed property.
Okay,
and
the ORS is central assessed.
Yes, and so the idea is any county that has a piece of that centrally assessed property in it can participate if the centrally assessed value at issue is greater than $1 million.
Oh, okay. So even if it, in that county the value is less, if the overall
right.
central, okay.
Okay.
Does that answer it for you?
Thank you. I should grab the ORS now.
What would happen if we put a sunset on this? Would this interfere with your ability, say a 4-year, 6-year sunset on this? Would this interfere with your ability to use this tool?
Madam Chair, it might after the sunset, I suppose.
Nope.
But it's a little difficult to predict which horizon would work. For instance, with Comcast, we expect it to last several years, though I don't know when that might come to a close, or if something new might come in between then. I suppose a sunset could be drafted in a way so as to account for something that was pending. But
well, but if you had a sunset, I mean, anything that you did before the sunset would continue on.
Right.
I mean,
once
you invoke the tool, because once you invoke the credit, then you've given the credit.
Right.
And so if it sunsetted the next day, you'd still be
okay.
In.
The The other thing I would just add is, you know, this is intended to be a fairly simple presentation of this concept. Procedurally, it's doable on our end administratively. It's a simple idea. You keep your money, we'll work out the litigation, or settlement even can occur. And so the idea is it's the best solution that we tossed around a lot of ideas, and this was the simplest, best bet for addressing this, and I'm not sure that it would benefit from a sunset.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you. Give me an example. Two taxpayers in front of you, both having appeals over $1 million pieces of property. Why would you say, you don't have to pay me, but you do? Give me a basis of why you would say one has to pay and the other one doesn't. I'm asking the assessor.
May I just add to your hypothetical? No one has to pay. It's the taxpayer's choice whether to pay. They then run the risk of a delinquency, and they have a 16% interest in that case. But we don't tell anyone that they have to pay. We send the bill. Yeah.
I understand that. What my question is why would you give somebody the credit and somebody not the credit?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, one example that comes to mind for me, besides the Comcast appeal, which we did set up a reserve account, which is allowed under the current statutes, sent out a notice to all the taxing districts, had open public forum to discuss with them. They reluctantly agreed, yes, we should put the money aside. So not to belabor that case, but the issue with there is there's the 12% risk still running, and we can only set aside 1 year a year after that year is ended. So to cut to this is I had a large personal property appeal a number of years ago. Typically, I would see using this in cases where it's not necessarily the appraisal valuation decisions that are being litigated as much as same as Comcast here. It's the litigation surrounds the validity of the assessment to begin with, the method of appraisal, how you arrive at your values. It very often takes many years, very complex and convoluted at times. The case coming to mind for me was the Blue Cross Blue Shield personal property cases back from over 10 years ago. It took Multnomah County over 8 years for those to be settled. When we were done, the interest exceeded the taxes that if we had just caved, so to speak, to the pleadings to begin with, we would have been money ahead as a county. The issue is tied up in the courts in how was personal property be valued. It wasn't a simple, straightforward of, here's the appraisal, we agreed on this. Comcast is different, yet the same. Is it centrally assessed? Are the intangibles part of the valuation? Or are they not? It's, for the most part, outside the county's and the taxing district's ability to argue either way. It's with the Department of Revenue and the Attorney General's office. It's expected that this case could take 5 to 6 or 7 years. There's even the possibility, I've been told, of a U.S. Supreme Court involvement. These are the type of cases I would be looking at. The $1 million threshold had Wheeler County Assessor in the conference call talk about this. And he said, well, I have specially assessed issues. And in my county, a special assessed value of $1 million is a large impact to our county. And there's another area where we have a lot of issues around is the validity of how you calculate specially assessed property, whether it's around exemptions, the use of the land. We have a complex tax system, and when it's just a straightforward valuation appeal, it would be the exception, not the rule, where I would use it in a case for anything under actually $10 million, as I looked at our history over the last 10 years in Multnomah County. And it would have to be where there's a large question of the parameters being used to come up with the values that would be presented at trial.
Does that answer your question?
Well, to some degree. I've spent most of my career valuing as a CPA, doing business valuations, profit valuations, whatever. But there is a certain methodology in which you operate within parameters. So what I'm hearing you say is that if it was an issue of the methodology or the basis upon valuing a piece of property versus the assess process, that's where you would be apt to grant them the credit. Is there that much difference between the methodology you're using and then the rest of the world uses? Obviously, if it's being caught up in court for 5 years plus.
Let's let the lawyer answer this one.
if you'll mind me answering your question. Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer. Let me just bring it back, and this may answer what you're asking. One example that you caught on that Mr. Walworth just offered is, if you have a question of law as compared to a question of fact, so if it's just the value at issue, there may be less perceived risk than if the whole question of law, was this even taxable? Maybe all the values at issue in that case. That's a great risk. So that could be one situation where that's a person, the question of law case is the instance where we would issue deferred billing credit. The question of law, we might not. But there, you could compare two questions. I'm sorry. Question of fact case is where we might not. But you can imagine two question of fact cases where it's just the value at issue. They are taxable. There's no question of law there. And you might have a taxpayer with fairly standard commercial or industrial property. You might have a taxpayer with very special commercial or industrial property where the methodology you're talking about as a CPA or as a assessor or real property value is better established for the standard properties, but there may be real arguments to be made for the especial property on both sides, and so there may be more perceived risk in the especial property case.
Okay. Other questions? All right. That's it. That's all we have. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2569. And we have a motion, Senator?
Yes, if you want to open a work session.
Okay, let's open a work session first.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2569 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2569 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm going to be voting no. I'm still uncomfortable with some of the ramifications of this piece of legislation.
Okay. Record Senator Telfer as a no, please. Any other objections? Okay, so ordered. Senator Morris, would you like to carry this one?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2570 and just give the committee and the audience notice we have to be out of here by 2 o'clock today. It's a short day. So, Christine, quickly.
House Bill 2570 equalizes the law between roll corrections that are made for the current tax year within the current tax year and some roll corrections that are made in subsequent tax years roll corrections that are made in the current tax year for past tax years. And currently there's a difference in law and the statute in the way that the bona fide purchasers are treated between these two types of roll corrections. And this measure would require that a person have purchased the property after October, the date the roll was certified in October, in order to be considered a bona fide purchaser for the purposes of any roll corrections, either in the past, for rolls that are corrected in the past, and for rolls that are corrected in the current year for the current year. Mm. And it kind of makes the requirements uniform for that. And a person who is a bona fide purchaser does not have to face these roll changes if they purchase their property after the date the roll certified in October. But if they purchase prior to that, they are subject to changes based on the roll certification in October.
Okay. We have written testimony from Jed Tompkins, and we have Bob Roman signed up.
Chairman Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Bob Roman. I'm the Clackamas County Assessor and the President of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. Very simply, we support this bill. It is really a housekeeping bill and brings some existing statutes into a consistent application. We have a situation right now where if you have a current purchaser of a property that purchases that property before we certify the tax roll, even if we've made some adjustment to that property, they're responsible for the taxes. If you have a property that is being corrected, for instance, in the situation where you have an omitted property and you're going back to correct that, if you have a purchaser that has purchased after the January 1 assessment date of the year that farthest back that you're correcting, they will not have to pay the tax for that year. What this bill does would make it so that it would be consistent with that bona fide purchaser in the current year, and as long as they have purchased it before the roll was certified in that year, then they would be responsible for the taxes. Did that lose everyone?
Yeah, you see a lot of glazed over eyes here.
I'm glad I'm carrying the last bill. Senator Haas can carry this one.
I have just put Senator Haas on notice. And you just wanted written testimony and not to speak, right?
Madam Chair, I would be here to answer questions.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind speaking real briefly. Randy
Very
Wall,
briefly,
Multnomah
and
County
and
Assessor. While Bob just illustrated, there's that magic date of January 1st. We're not sure if this appears to be a housekeeping issue. If you purchase December 28th, you owe the tax the next following November. If you purchase January 2nd right now, you don't. This makes it consistent that everyone that purchases before that certification date is responsible. Simplest example, we find a house that's been there for 8 or 9 years. We go back to current year plus 5 years. You're responsible for all those years. That's the simplest example I have. Thank you.
Actually, that was, I'm glad we let you talk. Okay. Questions from the committee?
Well, this would not void an agreement in a purchase contract. It wouldn't supersede an agreement in a purchase contract, would it, with respect to the payment of taxes?
Chairman Burdick, Senator Morris, no, it would not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. No one else has signed up. Anybody else want to talk? Good. Hearing's closed. open a work session on whatever this is. House Bill 2570.
Yeah, let's get this into Senator Haas's hands quickly.
Motion, Senator Morris. Motion quick.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2570 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. You missed your chance. Senator Haas will carry this bill. Okay, that completes our agenda, committee. We are adjourned.
He didn't lose it.
Committee, we are adjourned.
He didn't lose it.